Hi, this is Niles McFlower. Today I would like to talk about how and why Gary Johnson can become president in 2016. Now you might say, well, don't you usually talk about things that deal with science and physics and metaphysics and all that other stuff? What's politics? Well, this is different than politics, at least in my mind. I think this has to do with world events, and it may change, to some extent, how the world moves ahead. To me, that is a very important subject. And Gary Johnson is an interesting fellow, and I thought it would be a good subject to talk about, because if I don't say where and what and how I think about this under these circumstances, it just might not get out. Yes, I could talk about it on Why Life Is, which is a show that I have, but I don't think it's appropriate for that. I think this is its own subject, totally in its own realm, and I want to discuss this in a way that will hopefully enlighten folks about not just Gary Johnson or William Wilde, or that's his vice presidential candidate, or anybody else who is involved in the situation, because I think that it is really about understanding, from my viewpoint and maybe from other people's viewpoint, the politics that we're facing, you know, on a worldwide basis, and that starts to some extent here in the United States. I consider the United States a leading country, if not the leading country in the world, in many respects. Now, I also recognize each country has something to contribute and to benefit from other countries. So it isn't as though I think that there's nothing else out there except the U.S. That's not my viewpoint. Also, I want to preface what I'm saying with a prejudice I have against a certain type of thought called progressivism. Now, my prejudice against progressivism is that it in itself is a form, by my standards, of arrogance and egotism. I define it as a means of a person telling other people how they should behave or how they should think, because their thought, their own thought, is greater than those others should think or can think. And so people who have this are egotistical or arrogant. They think my thought's better than your thought, so you should listen to what I say, and you should behave, and you should think the way that I think. And they use government as a tool to achieve that result. They use the government to overpower people, to force people, to enslave people, and sometimes it costs some people their lives. This is a part of politics that I have a definite, strong belief in, a belief against in, and a belief that it is toxic and destructive to wherever it occurs. Some people think progressivism is a great thing. They may not know what I just said or may not believe what I just said. But nonetheless, it's something worth thinking about. And there have been great people in history that have been progressives. One of the most well-known was Woodrow Wilson. He himself was a proclaimed ahead of the Progressive Party of sorts in his own mind during the time that he was president. He believed strongly that he thought, in his thinking, was the correct way for other people to not only think but behave. He was also, in my opinion, very prejudiced against black people and against a number of other types of races and different sects of people. And this somewhat came from some of his progressive ideas, but it also came from just being a prejudicial viewpoint. Progressivism started a long time ago, long before Woodrow Wilson. Progressivism really started when human beings became much more, we'll call it, prone towards being egotistical, which happened during the beginning of the Age of Reason. As we thought more and used more of our thinking apparatus, people became increasingly more egotistical. It doesn't mean egotism didn't exist thousands of years ago, because it did. But it became more prominent and more as a movement, as majority of people became more thinking people than just emotive type people. And it also became that way as more people became educated, which has increasingly been a good thing as we entered into what would be called the Age of Reason. And that's a date. That's kind of like the beginning of the 18th century or so, although many people say it started at the beginning of the 17th century. So somewhere between 1600 and 1700, we could talk about a lot of people moving a bit more into the dominated thinking realm. And so progressivism sort of followed suit. It was a little bit delayed from the time people actually became better thinkers, because it takes a while for society to develop this sort of attitude. And that's what I would consider a societal attitude. It isn't just one person, therefore, proclaiming that it exists. It's really something that permeates from parental guidance and other factors, education many times, promoting it in people. And that's unfortunate. Now, a lot of people think progressivism is a good thing because it's supposed to stand for people being reasoners rather than emotionally and dynamically controlled by how they feel rather than what they think. And so there's a belief that if everybody were progressive, we would have an improvement. But if progressivism is, as I've described it, a form of egotism leading to arrogance, that's not a good thing at all. It's a terrible thing. We'll deal with this subject more later in this show, but I wanted to bring this up because it falls into the issue of who is Gary Johnson and whether or not he is the fellow that is right for the job, so to speak, to become president of the United States. And can he ever do that? I mean, it would seem like it's as a libertarian, which is what he's running as now. He has run in the past and been elected as a Republican. But I think the most important element about Gary Johnson is that he's relatively humble and he lacks most of the ideology of progressives. So he doesn't appear to be very progressive in his thinking, and his attitude is that people should make up their own minds about most things, and he believes very much, very strongly, in the protection of the rights of minorities, particularly when it has little or no effect on the majority. So something the minority may be doing, be it whatever group or person, that has a huge effect on the majority that the majority doesn't like, that's something to be concerned about. But when minorities are doing things that affect only themselves, they should be left alone to do that. And that's kind of what libertarianism is about. It's not the full idea, but it's certainly part of it. And Gary Johnson fulfills that in terms of how he sees his view of the world. And that's a big, big kind of political idea. Most people may not realize that that governs a lot about how a person is going to govern others. And he is the kind of person who is both open-minded about most things, and at the same time, he respects the rights of minorities and the individual. It's the individual choices that people have and can make that makes their life interesting and creative. And if you remove these choices, they stop being that way. They become eventually enslaved. Progressives usually enslave people. That's what one of their ways of operating. And Gary Johnson wants to free people. He wants them to be free economically. He wants them to be free socially. He wants them to be free in most ways. He is concerned about this in a predominant way because he was a governor in thinking about it, about this nation, the United States of America, which many people would say, well, then he's a patriot. Well, he is of sorts. At the same time, he has a characteristic which I would somewhat disagree with. He is dominated by the thought that most of the United States' interactions with other nations should be from a more isolationist viewpoint rather than trying to move in and affect the other nations in some negative or positive way. The reason he believes that is somewhat by taking his libertarian viewpoints and applying them on a national or international scale. And it's admirable to some extent because he's kind of like saying, well, what's good for us at home should be good for everybody if we all treat each other this way. It's a good thing. There is a problem with that kind of thinking in today's world because there's some very, very bad people out there that exist both as sects and also as countries in some circumstances and as sub-countries or other kind of political units. And they seek to do great harm rather than are neutral and want to do good. His model doesn't work well in that situation or those situations, because if we're the leading country and we don't lead to prevent those people from taking over or destroying others, then we're not taking on the responsibilities that we have beyond our own borders. Now, that doesn't mean we should be paying when other people can pay for military action or paying in terms of life and the harm that can come from trying to function in a way which is militaristic or which has to do with our own military. There should be as much responsibility put onto others as they possibly can muster for themselves to do these things, and there should be alliances made so that that's a shared activity. That's the difference, maybe, in the way I see that situation and some of Gary Johnson's viewpoints. However, if there was declared war, he's made it clear that he would exercise the duty of that declaration to the fullest extent. So it isn't as though he is completely a pacifist. Far from that. He just doesn't believe that the United States should be intervening unless there is some doctrine that's being followed and that it's voted on by the people of the country through their representatives. Some of that makes sense, but not all things can be done through the declarations of war, especially in the complicated world we live today. So he's sort of still in that position of being a bit outside of where some people are comfortable. I'll give you a more direct example of that so that you can understand his position. He would not necessarily fall into alliance with Israel if Israel becomes in a war with the Palestinians or possibly even the Iranians. So you need to realize that this is a guy who does have different standards than what is typically, certainly beyond, different from a neocon or someone who believes very strongly that we should defend and fight for some countries. that position is not even necessarily one that I'm completely comfortable with, but it is Gary Johnson's, and frankly, about half the people in the country follow what he thinks more than not. So he isn't kind of outside the norm, and that means he still could become president with an idea that I don't necessarily agree with, but it is something that is not completely putting him beyond being able to be electable. Now, in terms of some of the things that are very, very strongly attractive to me about Gary Johnson, he is seeking for economic independence for people, and instead of trying to help people get something for nothing, he wants them to have the opportunity to earn more than they ever have in their lives before through increased opportunities produced by reducing taxes and reducing government restrictions so that people can have the resources to be able to do things for themselves instead of having it given to them, but at great cost by the government. This is a different attitude than some people have, but it is consistent with many people who think in a more conservative direction, but at the same time are also libertarian, which is kind of where he is. He's sort of a mixture of those. But he's also a liberal. His liberal attitudes included what I just previously described about his way of seeing how to deal with the world in terms of other countries, etc. And he's liberal in that he doesn't want to expand the military in ways that are wasteful and that do not provide additional security for the United States proper. Now, that's an interesting idea. And his viewpoint is he wants to cut the military by 43% from where it was in 2012, which, by the way, today would be another 25% from where it was then. So he wants to cut it down 25% more from where it is now. And that would be a very difficult thing to do, considering what we're up against. But he doesn't believe in carpet bombing and some other things that we're doing. His idea is to be smarter, not fight more or harder, and to use more smart means of that are less costly of defeating people who want to harm us. I agree with some of his ideas. I just don't know that they can achieve a 25% reduction from our present level of cost of military. Maybe. And maybe the way that to do that is to make the military more competitive as a means of getting some things done so that competition causes some cost savings. So we have to look at that from him telling us more about what though his ideas are about that. I don't know what they are myself at this point. I can't really tell you, but I'm going to say this. There's some people outside listening to me right now. They took some of my paperwork, and on that paperwork it tells me something about which states Gary Johnson thinks he's going to win. I want to have that copy in my hand, and I don't at this time, so maybe they'll come in here and slide it under the door or something. In the meantime, as I'm saying this, I hope that it will become obvious that, okay, they're coming in right now. I hope it will become obvious that I'm not here to completely rubber stamp or even make it seem as though everything that Gary Johnson says or does is perfect. I think the guy really has as much going for him in terms of becoming a decent president as anyone else that could be running, and certainly more than the two people that are running that most people identify as being presidential candidates, and that is Hillary Clinton and, of course, Donald Trump. I think he's got much more to offer than either one of those two candidates. And I want to tell you that he actually can become president by a method that he's come up with himself, but other people have thought of it, including myself. And that is that he doesn't have to win a majority of the popular vote. As a matter of fact, I don't think he can. But he could win enough electoral votes to be able to throw the entire election into the Congress, specifically the House and the Senate, the House for who would be president and the Senate for who would become vice president. And the most important part of that equation is the House itself. And the House is fairly interesting because there's over 30 more members of the House that are in the Republican Party, and Johnson used to be a Republican, so they would feel a little bit easier with him than the Democrats would at this particular point, although some of the Sanders folks kind of like Gary Johnson. So, I mean, there's sort of, he has a mixture of people who might like him. At the present time in the House, probably as much as a third of the Republicans are not thrilled with Donald Trump. Now, there are lots of reasons for that. Probably the biggest reason is that Trump is a fellow who thinks of himself too much and not enough of others, which includes the rest of the Republican Party and a bunch of other factors. And they don't feel, some of these people, as I've listened to them, don't feel that he represents the party. He kind of just represents Donald Trump, and sometimes even represents Trump himself more than he represents the best that the country could be. Now, I'm not saying that's completely true all the time. I think that he has a lot of good intentions. But I also think he's a bit, if not a lot, of a narcissist, which means he thinks of himself almost habitually and compulsively. And by thinking of himself, he comes first and then the country comes second. And I think a good president has to be the exact opposite. The country comes first and the personal issues of the person and his family have to come second or third or tenth or whatever. With Gary Johnson, I sincerely believe he's got that characteristic. He really does seem to walk the walk, and he seems to be a guy who has done this in the past, showing that he's willing to make great sacrifices on a personal level as well as to effectuate a betterment for others. He's even paid for a large part of his prior elections to the tune of $500,000 to $1 million. Luckily, he had that much money from some business activities that he does. And so this is a guy who's really willing to do it. And a lot of people say, well, Trump's put in this much money. Well, he lent the money. He didn't know how much he put in. But also, it's an attitude thing. It has to do with not just how much money you put in, but how you relate to the other people about the money you put in. Do you even bring it up? Is it important or not? So these things are important considerations. Hillary Clinton is a woman who's been around for a very long time. Her idea is big government. She really believes that the government should control people, not vice versa. But she's in the wrong country for that. She really would have done quite well in the old Soviet Union, and maybe today, if she could come in and challenge Putin, she might do okay. You see, her idea is that government should control, and people should obey. And she is willing to do whatever it takes to get people to give her the power necessary to achieve that. She is strongly a progressive. By her own statements, I'm not saying this by my judgment, she makes herself clear to be a progressive. Trump is a bit of a progressive himself, but he's moved away from it to some degree in the last few years, somewhat through tutelage by Newt Gingrich, who kind of had some influence over moving him from that a bit. There's an interesting point to that, isn't there? If you want to have a progressive as a president, I would certainly think you would definitely want to vote for Hillary Clinton because she is the type of person who is sincere in her approach that she wants progressivism as part of her platform and part of her way of governing. So Gary Johnson is the type of person who is going to look for people thinking independently and thinking for themselves and living their lives for themselves and expecting very little from their government in terms of anything personal, and certainly not expecting to get something for nothing from the government, or hopefully not from other people either. That's a kind of, we'll call it, to me, humble position, and one also that has with it the desire for freedom for all people. I have great respect for that. To me, someone who wants others to be free is the type of person that I want to be running things. And the last person I want to be running things is someone who wants other people to obey and be a servant to their power, be it government or otherwise. That's the last person I want to have power. You might want to read Plato's book, The Republic, because that book kind of explains a bit of this information. I remember I read that a long, long time ago and was very impressed by some of the ideas there. So if you're Platonic in your thinking, I guess you would think a lot like Gary Johnson and Wilde, his vice president. Now, that fellow was, believe it or not, he was the governor of Massachusetts as a Republican governor, which is very strange. Both of these men were Republican governors in states where they have very high Democrat, at least people who claim to be Democrats, voters, the 2-1 in some cases or more over Republicans, and yet they got to be elected. So there's a commonality there. They think similarly, and I think it's a great thing. How does Gary Johnson expect to get to be elected, though? That's the point. I mean, all of this is very interesting, but it doesn't mean that it's worth a hill of beans if he can't get elected. Well, his idea is the following. I'm going to read these off to you so that this is out of his own thought. He thinks that the following states he has a better, even or better chance of getting the electoral votes in an election, provided he can make it into the debates. That's the three debates in the fall. And he has to be at 15% or more in several important polls on a national level to get into those debates. And he could get kicked out. Even though he gets in the first one, he can get kicked out if he falls below the 15% level for the next one. So he has to stay at that level or rise. If he achieves that, he thinks he can reach these states and win their electoral votes: Alaska, Idaho, Maine, Montana, New Hampshire, New Mexico, Utah, and Wyoming. Now, if you look at those states, one of the things that you probably become aware of very quickly is those are the kinds of states where there are unusually high numbers of some types of conservative people. And in addition, they also are states that are more Western than they are. They're not on the East Coast, right? You're not going to find them on the East Coast. And they tend to be more fundamentally individual states, states that support the rights of the individual rather than the rights of large majorities over minorities. So it's an interesting idea that these states also have some of the larger percentages, which is still very small, of libertarians. So it isn't that they're without libertarians either, but that's not the key. The key isn't how many libertarians, because that libertarians have like 1%. That's it. 1% of the total in those states, if you average them together. Some of them are less than that. So, I mean, that's not a really big number. It's not going to get you to the presidency. But it does equal 32 electoral votes, if you count them up. I think that there's one state that, besides those, Johnson has a really good chance of winning this year only. And I'm going to tell you what it is. It's Wisconsin. I think that of all the states, Wisconsin could be won because Wisconsin so strongly went for a conservative, but not Trump, which was Cruz, in the primary contest. And I think that that tells us something about their Republican constituents. Now, they also have elected a Republican governor. They have redone his election and re-elected him for governor after he was challenged by the Democrats. And he has shown that despite the stronghold by some of the unions, et cetera, in the state, there could be a majority vote towards a libertarian. But interestingly, I don't think Donald Trump will take Wisconsin. I think he will lose it handily to Hillary. So the problem here is that Johnson has to become effectively a spoiler by taking Wisconsin as a majority vote, not just take it because he took a few, some of the popular vote. And I think he has a chance of doing it. He would have to campaign there more heavily than maybe he has time or money to do. But if he got those extra 10 electoral votes, that would put him up to 42. And if Hillary trumps Trump, as I think she might in the election, he's going to need those extra votes to keep her from getting 271 electoral votes. And that's the only way he can win. To prevent her from getting 271, or, of course, Trump from getting 271. I don't think Trump can get to 271, and I think Hillary can get up to 300 or better. So that means that if Gary Johnson can get 42, and they're really stolen, as people claim they will be, mostly from Hillary Clinton, well, then the likelihood is that what you would see is it going to the House of Representatives to determine who is going to be the president. This is the ticket. This is the way that Gary Johnson can become president, because if it goes to the House of Representatives, I don't think there are enough votes in the House of Representatives for either Hillary Clinton or for Donald Trump. There's enough Republicans to easily, handily vote for Trump if they all did. But I don't think all of them will. And I'm not sure every Democrat, if faced between Hillary Clinton and Gary Johnson, would vote 100% for Hillary Clinton. And so Johnson might even pick up a couple Democratic votes, and he would pick up potentially a good portion of the Republican vote, giving him a majority. If he gets a majority, he will become the next president, the 45th president of the United States. And the odd part about this is what might happen in the Senate. Most people aren't aware of this. When our Constitution was originally constructed, the idea was that the first two people with the highest number of votes would become president and vice president. And the Constitution kind of thought that was a good idea, like give it for top guys, right? Well, immediately, because there was a tremendous difference between parties, and you had the people who were Republicans and Whigs, and eventually the Whigs became, you know, Democrats. But you had these things go on, and they were very different from each other. So the idea that this happened for a couple of elections, that you would have a president of one party and a vice president of the other, it wasn't working out. So So they kind of made an adjustment for that. But what they didn't change was this part, that if you have the no one getting enough electoral votes and it going to the House and to the Senate still can choose a candidate of a different party. That still can happen today. So it is possible, maybe even likely, that William Wilde will not end up being vice president. Instead, it would be Pence, because the Senate is controlled, as far as majority vote, by the Republicans at this time. And they could choose Pence. That would be an unusual thing. I don't know how Johnson would feel about that. He might be able to handle it. I don't know how his vice president candidate would feel about it. I would be kind of bummed out by it, but it could happen. It doesn't mean it will. It's possible the Senate would just say, you know, we're going to have this guy who's going to be a libertarian president. Let's give him the vice president that he deserves or that he wants. And maybe that will be just the way it goes. It's hard to say if, perchance, this whole plan comes to fruition. Now, what are the odds that this is going to happen? I would put it right now at maybe a 1 in 3 chance. That's my opinion. Now, I could be so far off that it's ridiculous. A lot of people would say, wow, Hillary's going to sweep the whole country. She's going to get 9-10% more votes than Trump, and she's going to have 350 electoral votes. She's going to wipe out everybody, and that'll be the end of the thing, and it's goodbye. Well, if it turns out that way, she'll become president of the United States without question, and Kane will be her vice president. But I don't know that that's really true. I think it's going to be closer than that, and if there's any closeness at all in the election, any, there's a possibility then for this scenario to take place. Now, why do I think it's better that we end up with Johnson for president than Hillary? Well, because it's more likely that we'll all be a lot freer. It's more likely we'll all be a lot wealthier. It's all more likely that the world will become a safer, better place. The reason I say that is Hillary was Secretary of State when most of the things that have been bad that are taking place in the world were hatched or further amplified on. And she was the Secretary of State. I mean, you know, the best way to know somebody for future behavior is look at their past, to quote Dr. Phil. And I think that's true. I think that's a solid way of looking at it. It isn't like she did this 20 years ago or 30 years ago when she was a staunch communist. She was while she was going to college. You know, and Walensky was her, you know, her hallmark, and she wanted to be a staunch communist. I don't think she's a staunch communist. I think she's much more progressive, and she's pragmatic to some extent, but definitely wants to control other people. At any rate, that doesn't count now. I think that what counts now is that what has she done in the last 5 or 10 years, and that's where you look at it. And she's declaring herself a third term of Obama. Well, Obama's been terrible in a lot of these categories. You know, I think Obama's smarter than Hillary, too. I think he has a higher level of intelligence. It's just that he uses it to be destructive to the country he's supposed to be president of, because he doesn't like the United States. He has some animus about it, both from his background as a Muslim before he converted, and also as a black man living in a country during part of his time living here, in his earlier days, when there was still prejudicial interactions between black people and everybody, if not at least the people in power, which included police in some places. So he has all this going on from his past, and he is pretty much a Walenskyite. Yeah. More than Hillary is even today, probably. both of them definitely fall into the socialistic aspect. So looking at this from that standpoint, I think that Johnson's the best guy. Is he a perfect guy? No. People aren't perfect. We're electing human beings. We're not electing super people. And he's got a ways to go, probably, to become more of the kind of president that he can be. I think he's got it in him to become something even greater than who he is. Some of my chief, besides what I said earlier about his political ways of seeing other countries, some of his chief weaknesses are that he needs to be more assertive about his own belief in himself and what he can do. He's got to be, you can be humble and still state, this is what I choose to do. I'm going to do this, this, and this, and I'm going to make it happen because I've been able to do it under these circumstances in the past, but I'm willing to put in double the effort in the future and learn more about how to do it better. He hasn't quite like that yet, but I think he's moving in that direction. I just listened to his latest talk, and it sounded more like he was moving that way. A year ago, he wasn't even close to that. So I see him moving in a direction where he's able to express himself more as a leader, because that's what a leader has to do. A leader has to inspire confidence in other people that that person's going to really do something to make a difference for them, not just say, well, I really like everybody, and I think it's good that they like me, and we'll all do kumbaya together. You've got to sometimes say, this is what I'm willing to do. Now, one of the things that indicates he can do that is he has vetoed bills that were going against his philosophy more than anybody in the history of the United States as a governor. So he holds the record for that. But that's sort of like not saying anything. It's where you just write your name or don't write your name on a sheet of paper. I'd like to see him more outspoken about that position in a way that shows that he's got the backbone. I think that would help him out. I hope he's listening to this or will listen to this, because without that, I think he'll lose votes. And I think if he wins, he may not be the kind of president he needs to be. And I think he's kind of going to have to come out of the chute really strong if he is elected through this obscure way, because people are going to have their doubts about him. I mean, after all, he will not have won by the popular vote, even close. I mean, it won't even be like, oh, well, he lost by 1,000 or 10,000 or a million votes. No, he will have lost by millions and millions of votes. So people are going to look at him with great, trepidation and a sense of doubt. And so he's going to have to inspire very quickly a lot of people to overcome that. Hopefully he'll do it before it comes time for this potential change by being elected through the House, if it happens. All right. So what else can I recommend? And I want to say this because someone might get to him by saying they heard me, or he might listen to this, I don't know. And what else do I think he can do to improve his chances of winning? Well, I already mentioned, I think Wisconsin is another 10 electoral votes that I think he could absolutely need in order to achieve the result. Also, there's no guarantee he's going to take these states he thinks he can take. And I'm sure he'll try to campaign in other places. There are swing states. Wisconsin is kind of a swing state, but there are bigger, more important swing states. I don't know if he can have much of an effect there. Those are going to be fought for so heavily by both Hillary and Donald, I doubt that there's going to be much room for Gary Johnson. And I don't think his voice will get heard there, because it would cost too much and it would take too much time and energy, of which he will probably be missing on all of those fronts. But if he finds one, I would definitely go after that. I mean, if there's any kind of opening, if someone invites him or somehow something happens. I just found out that he's going to be on CNN Town Hall at 6 p.m. at Pacific. I think it's 9 p.m. Eastern. And Cooper is going to be, and I like him. I think he's a interviewer. He's going to be interviewing him, along with town hall, meaning other people will be talking and asking him questions. And I like that. I really like that, because I think that that's how he's going to get his best shot, is to get on things like that. The other thing I would encourage him to do is to possibly talk about some of the reasons why his policies, and use a contrast, not a negative thing, why his policies and why he, using his policies, most important, would be more effective than the other two candidates. Because right now, he's a little wishy-washy when he addresses it about that. It's almost like he's trying to be politically correct, which he shouldn't be, about that issue. And I don't want him to go negative on him. I don't want him to say, oh, well, he'll be this way, a horrible person, and he's this way, and he's a crazy person. And I can say a little bit about that, you know, more than he should. But I think it's good to contrast what you would do and say what you think they would do, and then let them say the opposite, or if they believe that to be true. This is before you even get into the debates. I think it's a good way to set yourself up for a debate. He's got to plan on being in the debates starting in October, and he's got to set it up so that he has the right leverage, so that the people that ask him questions based upon what he's already made statements about. And he's got to make those statements affirmatively and strongly, and he isn't doing enough of that. He's got to say, I'm for this, Hillary is for that, Donald's for this, and I'm for that. And if he puts it in, you know, real, and not make it a hostile gesture, it isn't, well, they're all terrible people, you know, but this is what I'm willing to say I will do, and this is the ways I'm going to do it, and I have the confidence in both myself and the people that I'll be working with that we can achieve these results. That will get him a stronger debate, because he will be able to be asked questions about the very things I'm saying, and he'll have answers that will beat out the other people. If you go in there wishy-washy, you're going to end up looking like Romney in his last debate. That's the problem. You've got to have a strength to your message that was developed before you get to the debating floor. And it has to be strong enough so that that when you say what you're saying, you already have a month or more of time that you have been saying the same thing without it sounding like, well, that's a new idea. I never heard him say that before. Because people won't remember that you say it, even if you say it just during a debate. But if it's been reinforced with what you've said before and you've contrasted it, then you're... opponent has to be able to beat the contrast. And if you're saying something that's truthful and accurate, and not something that's just made up nonsense or terrible character statements about them, then you get some points from that. You can make it so that people can really hear you. And I think that that would be a great thing that I would hope Johnson would improve upon. There's some improvement. I see it coming. I just hope he does it fast enough. I think he's got weeks of time, not months of time, to get this all like down really strong. Another thing that I would suggest is that Johnson make a list of the kinds of people that he would put on the Supreme Court, similar to what Trump did, but more direct. And why? Now, he's got to be careful about this, because there's push buttons. And I think that he's got to be show that the people he wants to have on the Supreme Court, the people he wants everywhere, have to have open minds, but at the same time stand for something that is in the Constitution. He's on the record as saying that he wants people to interpret the Constitution as it was written, not as they rewrite it. Okay? And he's very strong on gun rights. But my concern is that his stance in the way he says things doesn't convince people that he will protect the rights of citizens that are being changed by by a Supreme Court that's being loaded with people who are reinterpreting the Constitution based upon their political ideology. That should be something he should say. I will not put someone on the Supreme Court with an ideology that they themselves have made clear, or that others have brought out in them, and they haven't retracted it. And I won't put people on there. I won't suggest them to go on there, because those people can't be trusted, and they're the type of people who might try to make war instead of try to make justice. And if you say something like that, people will start believing that they can trust you. The way he's putting it right now, he says some contradictory things about the Supreme Court that people don't trust, and that's going to lead him to failure. He's talking about putting people on that he thinks are pretty nice people, and they've had some open-minded decisions, but they also have an ideology. That's the danger. You've got to make it clear you're not going to buy into other people's ideological issues. That's not the place to be if you're going to be on the Supreme Court. You shouldn't have an ideology, unless it's that all people have the right to have the Constitution interpreted for them as it was written and as it is just as well. Justice is not just the rights of the minorities, it's not just the rights of the majorities. It's the right for the most amount of people to do the most amount of good the most amount of the time. That's a tough one for some of the Supreme Court justices that have been put on the court in decades now of time. Also, he needs to do the same kind of thing in terms of the people he's going to select for the jobs that he has to fill. Everything from Secretary of State to Attorney General, etc. You almost need exactly the same kind of thought process. Sure, they're not necessarily all about justice, but they still should not have a specific brand of ideology that colors their thought process and their actions and interactions in their job. That's a really important quality that needs to be asserted on his part, and maybe he needs to name a few people that he would consider for different positions. I don't think that's a bad thing. You know, and that sort of stuff, I think, would go a long way to quieting some of the fears people have about a third-party candidate who they may not have heard about before last week, and who they know little about other than he's some kind of libertarian who used to smoke and up until very recently did smoke pot. And people are going to say, well, he's a pothead, he's a wacko, you know. And he used to own some part of a company that manufactured marijuana for medical purposes mostly. But the point is that this makes him sound like he's kooky, like he's a wacko, or that he's some kind of person you can't trust. Maybe he's stoned half the time. One thing he's done is he said, I won't smoke marijuana anymore until elected president and then afterwards, because the job is so important, you can't have any kind of effect of a drug, not just marijuana, but alcohol or any kind of drugs that are affecting you. And he's already said that. He should make that point even more clear. Now, he also believes that people should have a right to use drugs as long as they don't harm anybody else. They should have the right to do anything that doesn't harm other people. And I agree with that position reluctantly. I've changed my position personally from otherwise, because I think that it's the right position, and it's the position that allows people to be as free as possible. Now, if someone uses a drug and that influences them to still do harm to people, then they're responsible. They're maybe doubly responsible for the harm they caused. Because not just that they did it, but they did it knowingly, smoking or doing something or whatever they were using, that caused them to be further violent and more destructive than they might have been. So those are the kinds of positions I think he has to do if he's going to mitigate the elements that are out there that could stop him. And I hope tonight's show has made some difference. I hope it is actually, it was actually today's show. I'm still doing this in the middle of the afternoon, which is unusual for me, of how and why Gary Johnson can become president in 2016, because he actually can. Now, the things that I've mentioned, if I had another hour, I could probably go a lot deeper into some psychological factors going into my past and talk about the psychotherapeutic aspects of all these people and what they might need or change. But at this point, I think that this has been enough to kind of give us an idea that it is possible, probably not even the most likely outcome, but I think it's a 1 out of 3. Some people say 1 out of 10, and some people might say 1 out of a zillion, this could come true. If there's ever been a time when a person like Gary Johnson could become president, I think this is it. I think this is one moment in life where it could make a difference. And I consider him a kind of spiritual guy, too, by the way. That's a different subject, I realize, but I just want to throw that in there. And I think he's very functional in his spirituality, and I think that's a good thing, too. It functions through him, not just he does it in some, we'll say, religious way. He has a religion, but it's more like he's actually practicing what he believes, and I think that's a very good thing as well. I trust people more that have those two things joined together. It seems to always work out better. Not saying that it has to be true. I'm just saying that that seems to be another thing that has a positive element. Well, I hope this has been helpful. I have found it interesting talking about this, and I hope that you go to the internet, check him out. Particularly, the best part isn't what's been written about him. Listen to some of the things that he's actually talked about, the stuff he's actually said. To me, that him saying it in his own words, and his vice presidential candidate helping him out a little bit here and there, seem to be more enlightening than anything, because it really tells you the inner nature, and that I like that. So, until we meet again, this has been Niles McFlower, speaking tonight on behalf of why Gary Johnson can become president.